this is your Polycast for Tuesday, April 19th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, one school district could be a model for school discipline and putting a price tag on pollution. Immigration advocates say as many as 30,000 Minnesotans could be affected by an upcoming U.S. Supreme Court decision on one of President Obama's executive orders. The High Court heard arguments in the case yesterday, Matt Sepik reports.
Obama's 2014 executive order deferring the deportation of the parents of legal U.S. residents remains on hold after Texas and 25 other states sued. The Minnesota Catholic Conference says the decision striking down the order could break up families, and the Immigrant Law Center says unauthorized immigrants in Minnesota pay around $37 million a year in taxes. But Republican State Representative Steve Drazkowski says Obama overstepped his authority.
It will be good when this president is done, and I'm hopeful that the next person to occupy that office will be somebody that has a great deal of respect for the Constitution.
The High Court's decision in the case is expected in June. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Filmmakers are angry about a proposal before a Minnesota House committee to defund the state's film incentive program and disband the Minnesota Film and Television Board. The measure would save $1.8 million, but the rebate program, supporters say, has resulted in 155 projects being made in Minnesota over the last 3 years. Bryant Simpson of the Film Technicians Union says that's remarkable given how little the program costs.
Out of all the incentives in the United States, this is one of the smallest, and it's still a success in Minnesota, even as it is really uncompetitive with the rest of the United States.
The cut is part of a larger jobs bill. House Republicans want to use the state budget surplus to cut taxes and fund road and bridge projects, so they're adjusting spending in other parts of the budget to pay for other priorities. A proposal before the Senate increases funding for the incentive program. Governor Mark Dayton is highlighting the state's water quality problems this week to build support for a key piece of his legislative agenda. Dayton says he's trying to increase public awareness about the need for further state investment in clean water projects. As Tim Pugmire reports, he's also trying to pressure lawmakers into taking action in the remaining weeks of the 2016 session.
In proclaiming Water Action Week, Dayton said he wants to make Minnesotans more aware of the quality of their drinking water and get them involved in efforts to protect it. Dayton sees it as a moral responsibility.
You know, ultimately, clean water is not going to come from laws and rules and regulations, although they're necessary and more may be necessary. It's going to come from an ethic, an ethic that's established all over the state that each of us has our own responsibility for making water quality better and for conserving and using it wisely.
Dayton has been pushing hard for improvement since state studies first alerted him to deteriorating water quality. Troubling levels of nitrates, phosphorus, and other chemicals are found in some drinking water supplies. Last session, he championed a farm field buffer requirement to prevent runoff. This year, he hosted a statewide summit on water quality and proposed a $220 million state investment in water projects and programs. Dayton, who held a news conference with several of his top cabinet members, said he wants people to better understand whether they're at risk.
I'm not trying to scare anybody. If your water quality is good, then you don't need to be concerned. But if it's not, you do need to be concerned, and you need to communicate to those who are responsible for it, whoever they may be, that that's unacceptable.
The widely reported water crisis in Flint, Michigan has added to the concern. Minnesota Health Commissioner Dr. Ed Ellinger said his agency is always looking for lead in drinking water.
While extreme cases such as Flint, Michigan is a scenario that is thankfully rare, lead contamination is still a problem because many homeowners have houses where they have lead pipes. So we need to continually monitor that.
Dayton said House Republicans' proposal for a $600 million bonding bill is woefully inadequate to make needed water infrastructure improvements. His bonding bill proposal totals $1.4 billion, including $167 million to help small communities replace aging drinking water and wastewater facilities. Republican Representative Paul Torkelson of Hanska, chair of the House Capital Investment Committee, said he shares the governor's interest in water quality projects. But Torkelson isn't ready to say how many of those projects might fit into the House bonding bill or when the proposal will be released.
We are looking at various proposals and how they would fit within that $600 million target. That's challenging work, but I'm prepared to take it on. And I guess my advice is stay tuned, because these are dynamic issues that can change over time.
Governor Dayton plans to visit a school, a research facility, and two municipal water treatment plants this week to share his water quality message. He said the effort will continue this summer with an 87-county tour to showcase water quality challenges and successes throughout the state. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The price tag on Minnesota's changing climate is on the verge of going up. State law already requires that the state account for climate change costs when deciding how to generate electricity, but a judge says the price range Minnesota is using is outdated and way too low by a factor of more than 10. Elizabeth Dunbar has the story.
Let's start with the obvious. Electric power costs money. There's whatever technology you're using to generate electricity, plus the cost of transmitting it and keeping all those power lines and substations running smoothly. In the case of most of Minnesota's power plants, there's also the cost of fuel, coal or natural gas. The combination of all those expenses is what ends up on utility bills. But there's a key ingredient that's being left out: the costs to society. We've known for a long time that the main cost, air pollution, is a public health threat, perhaps the best example being its link to asthma. And it turns out the pollution comes back to bite us again when it causes climate change.
The extent of these public health impacts is actually quite enormous.
Retired Twin Cities physician Dr. Phil Murray says, yes, global warming leads to more heat-related illness, but he says that barely scratches the surface of what we're already seeing that could, at least in part, be traced back to climate change.
Increased incidence of allergic problems, increased incidence of cardiovascular disease and stroke, and the increasing problems with vector-borne diseases like Lyme disease and things like malaria or dengue fever or Zika, for that matter.
That's why Murray and other physicians joined a coalition in asking a judge to recommend new, larger carbon cost numbers. On Friday, an administrative law judge mostly agreed the federal government's social cost of carbon figures were the way to go and suggested the State Public Utilities Commission adopt a new price range from about $11 to $57 per ton of carbon emitted. The PUC is expected to make a final decision on the numbers later this year.
We're thrilled with it. It's a huge victory for the environment and for public health in Minnesota, and it's the kind of decision that's likely to reverberate for years, probably decades.
Attorney Kevin Lee represented the physicians in the social cost of carbon case. He says as Xcel Energy, Minnesota Power, and Otter Tail Power factor in the updated carbon cost numbers, burning coal looks a lot less attractive.
This opinion is all about making those decisions in a way that incorporates what impact these decisions will have on future generations.
Fresh Energy's J. Drake Hamilton says a huge amount of research on climate change consequences has come out since the 90s. That's when Minnesota first put a range of prices on carbon emissions, about 50 cents to $4 a ton.
And so now we're looking at them being about 19 years behind the science.
Hamilton says Minnesota's law is unique and will result in more prudent decisions on behalf of electricity customers. But the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce says increasing the social cost of carbon could hurt the state's economy. The chamber's Bill Blazer says that's especially true if it results in higher electricity rates for Minnesota businesses than their competitors in other states.
There isn't a business in Minnesota that doesn't want our economy to operate in a more environmentally sustainable manner. The challenge, though, is to figure out a way to implement the policy in a way that keeps Minnesota companies competitive and employing Minnesotans.
Right now, he says, businesses are subsidizing residential customers' low rates. Meanwhile, the range of costs being used to account for the impact of carbon emissions is evolving. For example, a study published last year suggested $220 per ton of carbon is a more realistic measure of climate change costs. Study author Francis Moore, now a postdoc at the University of California, Berkeley, says previous cost estimates were missing some key details.
I mean, it's things like labor productivity. So people are just not as good at working when it's hot out.
Whatever the inputs, it's a complex equation and one that will likely generate debate for years to come. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A growing number of schools in Minnesota and across the country are relying on a school discipline program that emphasizes prevention over punishment. The approach came to Minnesota a decade ago, but it's getting new attention as schools look for more effective ways to deal with discipline. Reporter Solveig Wastvedt visited one of the first districts in the state to use the system.
10 minutes before the first bell at St. Cloud's Tech High School, students stream through the door to their lockers. Principal Charlie Eisenreich stands up against the wall and watches until a student comes in wearing a bright red baseball cap. Eisenreich catches the student's eye. He doesn't even have to ask. The student takes off the hat.
Thank you. What we really try to do is not make a big deal out of it right now. As they're walking down the hall, if they're going to their locker, they have their hat on, we'll just kindly ask them to remove it.
A handful of other students bare their heads as soon as they see Eisenreich. They clearly know the rules. And knowing the rules is the key to the behavior system St. Cloud started using in 2005. The system is called Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports, or PBIS. Schools using it teach students how to behave, just like they teach math and English. At Tech High School, students get behavior lessons during homeroom periods a couple times a month. The goal is to prevent bad behavior and reinforce good behavior. Data is also key. Staff track how many times each student gets sent to the office for discipline, and even what time of day and where discipline problems happen. They use the data to intervene early with students. Eisenreich says when St. Cloud adopted the method, his high school saw a drop in students getting sent to the office.
The other part of that is when you looked at some of our climate surveys that students filled out about how they felt about being at school, dramatically improved.
Behavior still isn't perfect at St. Cloud schools, but the system's success led Minnesota's Department of Education to bring training on it to districts all over the state. So far, the department says almost 30% of Minnesota's districts have participated. The Federal Department of Education runs a training center as well, and trainer Rob Horner says schools in all 50 states use the approach. Horner says the key to making it work is that everyone in a school has to agree on what good behavior looks like.
You need to define and teach a small set of really core values, things like being respectful, being responsible. You've also got a set of consequences for what happens if you don't do things right.
But getting teachers across a school to agree on those consequences can be hard. Some teachers are stricter, others have more relaxed rules. When a school starts this positive behavior method, some teachers might feel like consequences are being taken away. Others might think the new rules are too strict. That debate over consequences has been heated in one of the state's largest school districts. St. Paul schools have seen several student assaults on teachers over the past year, including one incident where a student choked a teacher unconscious. The district is also trying to address racial disparities in discipline, as students of color get suspended more often than white students. St. Paul started using the positive behavior model district-wide last year as a key part of its discipline strategy. But so far, not all schools have fully implemented the system. St. Paul officials say they don't have current numbers on how many schools have the approach in place. Horner says, according to his records, it's about 40%. St. Paul PBIS co-coordinator Aaron Metz says the new approach to behavior needs 3 to 5 years to take hold in a school.
It's a constant revisiting and looking at the needs of your students and of your families and of your staff and revising. It's not a black and white. It's not you're here or you're not here. It's really looking at the journey.
The St. Paul district saw suspension rates rise slightly last year. In St. Cloud, suspension rates are down for all groups except Asian students, where the rates are flat. St. Cloud students of color still get suspended at higher rates than their white peers, but the gap has narrowed. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.